Hey, Flo here, and this is my impression of an easily overwhelmed person finding out about Progressive Service Centers.
A whole center devoted to helping me if I get into an accident?
Ooh, it's too much! You drop your car off, they manage repairs, and if you need a rental, they give you one on site? Holy baloney macaroni, what will they think of next?
Taking the hassle out of making a claim. Now that's Progressive.
I forgot how to breathe! Does the air go in my nose and out my mouth or the other way around?
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Service centers not available in all areas. You have a choice of repair facilities.
Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you
welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel and patriotic music and songs and poems that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Today's guest is a real deal cowgirl poet, and I am absolutely delighted to share her poetry with you. Before we bring her on, let's listen to her lovely poem, The Leather is Red.
The leather is red. The lettering was gold. The leather was red, resting beside the hand-quilted bed, worn soft from her eager hands, honored place on the nightstand. Savored in the soft morning light, carried in her heart by day, wise words for the long night, words of faith led her way. In young hands when she married, surrounded by laughter and light, clutched when her babies were buried, dampened by tears at gravesite. Solace in times of deep sorrow, strength when she was weak, belief of a new tomorrow, wisdom to share and speak. Effie left a legacy of faith and love, generosity drawn from above. Her last gift lays by my bed. The lettering is gold. The leather is red.
Wow. Isn't that just wonderful? As I mentioned before, today's guest is cowgirl to the core with an amazing ranching heritage. In fact, I think it's safe to say that ranching is quite literally in her DNA. And as you've already heard, she has a wonderful way of weaving her experience and immense knowledge of ranch life into her poetry in such a way that truly takes you there. I am not the only one who thinks she's fabulous. Along with her own books, her poetry and stories have been included in numerous publications, and she has received awards from both the Western Music Association and the Academy of Western Artists for her poetry. I can hardly wait to read her new book, Rough Patches. We'll hear more about that later. But right now, I am so proud to introduce to all of you, Deanna Dickinson McCall. Welcome, Deanna.
Thank you, Belinda. I'm just honored to be here.
Oh, we're so delighted to have you on, and I've just been so looking forward to doing this show with you. And before we get talking about your life and kind of bringing people up to speed on who Deanna is, can you tell us about that poem that you just, I just love that poem. Can you tell us about The Leather is Red?
Yes. My husband and I were married quite young, and we moved to his family's place where he had married brothers and sisters and his folks and his grandparents there as well. And one of his grandmothers lived on the place in the house next to ours. And she taught me so much about life. And her name was Effie. And her faith never wavered. And so I wrote this poem, and it is based on Effie. And I do have her red Bible. It's in the place right there, right next to my bed now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you can just see it. I love just how you wove all of that in, and just how she started out with it young and carried it through all the ups and downs in her life. It was really, really beautiful. So great job on that poem, sweetie. I love it.
Well, thank you. And it's all based on Effie's life. She went through the Dust Bowl era. Mm-hmm. She was born in Arkansas. She was actually the last wagon train in the United States. She was on it, and they traveled to Oklahoma.
Wow.
But she lost children to tuberculosis, like a lot of people did. She and her husband both had it, and she had one surviving child who is my father-in-law.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So all the lines in there are based on really and truly her life.
Wow. That is so cool. That's one of the things I love about Western music, cowboy poetry. It's just all so rooted in history and rooted in the realities of ranch life that makes it really just so fun to listen to, for me anyway. So I was reading that your family actually homesteaded in Texas in the 1800s. Is that correct?
Yes. On my granny's side, Texas was settled in many ways by different colonies they'd go out and recruit different areas of the South to come out and homestead Texas. You were given land in exchange, and they were part of a group called the Mercer Colony. And they were given land in East Texas in the 1840s, I believe it was 1848, and consequently spread on westward that way. And so I cannot travel north to south, east to west in Texas without running into a ton of relatives.
So it sounds like they really all stayed in Texas. Like if they really didn't migrate out into other states so much, that most of your family, they stayed there?
Well, except for my branch. Now, his brothers all went on to California during, the Dust Bowl era. And I am some of the first generation not to be born in Texas. I was actually born in California.
Wow. Wow. So did your family ranch in California?
Yes, they did. From the Central Valley up to the north end, I was the only one to be born in the northern end of the state.
Wow. What part of the Central Valley?
My sisters and all were, Fresno, Bakersfield, Kalinga, all of that area, the Mojave Desert.
Well, I spent about almost 40 years in Visalia, so I know I'm familiar with all of
that. Yeah, you know the area.
I do know the area very much so. So tell us what your childhood was like, Deanna.
It was, I suppose, probably pretty typical of the times. My mother was a school teacher. She never really did, and from California, an old California family, as a matter of fact, from the Fresno area. And Dad always ranched, And Mom always taught school, and a lot of times, you know, Mom would have a house in town, and I'm the baby out of four girls. And Dad would stay on the ranches, or very often have my grandparents on a ranch, and go back and forth and that kind of thing. And the ranch I was actually, first ranch that I was brought home to did not have power there either, and to this day it doesn't. And that's in California,
wow.
So that'll give you an idea.
How remote.
And, you know, by today's standards, it's really not that remote. It's out of Red Bluff, California, in the foothills.
Oh, yeah. Wow. But if they don't have power lines running there, they don't have power lines running there.
No, ma'am, they don't.
Oh, my gosh. So did your family, I mean, me being raised on ranches, I mean, everybody worked when I was a kid. I mean, everybody worked. Is that what your life was like growing up?
Yeah, and I probably honestly didn't perhaps have to do as much as some of my older sisters because I was so much younger. After they left home, I did help Dad with cattle he bought later, and I was the only one home, and particularly after my husband and I married. And then, of course, we all went into the business together and moved to Nevada in the early 80s.
Mm. Wow. So what part did church play in your childhood? Or did you guys go to church? Or, I mean, some people I talked to, I mean, it was way later in life when they really came to know the Lord. How did that transpire for you?
Well, if I was in town and my folks traded and sold ranches back and forth quite often, and if I was in town, I would attend. Get on the little school bus, if it was down there, the Sunday school bus, and I would go to Sunday school and that kind of thing, you know, and the camp activities. And if we were further out, it was more of a Bible reading, you know, at home type thing.
So that's something that was part of sounds like the fabric of your family's life, even if you couldn't actually go to church.
That's correct. And I mean, of course, and I think most people are that way, and particularly more so of past, you know, the last past decades than it is nowadays. Most people I know in ag, their lives, their values, everyday life, it's based on Bible teaching.
Right. I would agree with that completely. So I know for me and for many people, there's a point, and I always love to hear the stories from my guests, there's a point. As a child, you believe in God and you're taught about God, but there's a point when he becomes real, when he becomes a set of God out there, God within your heart, and God you can talk to and you really understand and grasp who he is. Was that like an epiphany for you? Can you remember that, or was it just an evolution, or how was that for you?
You know, I don't know if I can actually truthfully remember the first time. You know, and I think, and when I say the first time, I'm sure everybody, at least for me, there's times when you are just that much closer than other times, whether it's we open ourselves to him and he's always there and we're just not aware how exactly that works. But some people would refer, I think, to it as being spirit-filled or different terms. And I think for everybody, they feel it differently.
Well, there's many people I've talked to that said it just kind of evolved. They just came to realize. So that is the coolest thing. Well, we're going to actually go into one of your poems here now. And could you tell us about writing?
Oh, gosh, it was one of the earlier poems that I wrote and was actually published back in the early days. In fact, my CD is named after that. And it was included Virginia Bennett, it was in the 90s, actually with Gibbs Smith as the publisher, did a book called 100 Years of Writing and Rhyming. I think it's Writing and Rhyming. And it's a really neat book. It's all women poets, and I have a couple of them in there, and this was one of the ones that was chosen. But it's a pretty short poem, and I'm kind of notorious for doing that pretty often. But I always feel like, gee, if you can say what you need to say in less words, you know, to do it. But it's pretty true of life, and I think whether you're man or woman or regardless of gender, it's what you do when you're on a ranch. That probably will sum it up.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to Deanna's poem, Riding.
Riding. Have you ever bundled up and had to ride when it was way too cold to be outside? It was your partner who kept you alive when you wanted to sleep in the snow and die. Have you ever been up high on a mountainside to have your horse miss a step and start to slide? You gave him his head, kicked loose your feet, praying you both didn't end up in the heap. Have you ever been chasing a cow across the plains, only to go flying before you could even catch his mane? You went over his head and landed on your back, just thankful the old pony's leg didn't snap. You ride through blazing sun and choking dust, or it's the cold snow and ice you cuss. But through it all, friend, we ride and ride. It's a matter of cowboy pride.
That's good. It's short, but it's good. It's actually kind of refreshing, Deanna, because most of the cowboy poets that I know, their poems go on. And, I mean, they're long. They're a lot of long poems.
I know my husband forever saying, you know, you should write some longer ones. And I said, well, if something takes that long to say it, then I'll write it longer.
Oh, you got that true cowboy spirit. Yeah, they don't talk much. Gosh. So speaking of your husband, you said that you all married pretty young. How old were you when you got married?
We were both 16.
Wow, that is young.
Yep.
That is young. So and then just tell bring us forward now. I mean, how then you got married and stayed in California, or what happened then?
We did. We got married. I went on and finished school. And we wanted to, it was getting very difficult in California to ranch with taxes and other things being so high. And so, and we very much wanted to do that and to raise our children that way. And my husband also rodeoed at the time. And I stopped rodeoing after I had twin girls the next year. And so my dad said, you know, he said, you can't hardly do it here anymore. And he said, what would you think of going to Nevada? You know, and so we jumped at the chance, and we ranched with them for 22 years. Well, he passed away, but 22 years. And it was very different from ranching in California. It was, you know, a whole different method over there. You're got 30, 40 below every winter. And you spend most of your summer raising hay you were going to feed all winter. And
right.
It was a pretty rugged, you know, existence as far as that goes. Most Nevada ranches are very dependent upon federal lands, and that was the case with this. We had our cattle out on BLM land, moving them every 6 to 8 weeks on a rest rotation program. And then we were irrigating the meadows and putting up hay to when you bring them in the winter to feed them all the way until the grass starts again on the range.
Wow. So I read it in your bio, but I really would like you to expound a little bit more on your living conditions on that ranch in Nevada.
Well, it was an old ranch as far as that goes, but the big adjustment for me, I'd been on ranches growing up as a kid with no power. But when you are a mother and a wife with no power, that really, really turns the tables on you. And so I had to adjust to that, and we did quite well. In later years, we got a generator that we could run in the evenings. But for several years, we didn't even have that. I had a propane refrigerator, propane lights in the main rooms and kerosene lights in the bedrooms and the bathroom. We had gravity flow water from a windmill that sat on the hill. And when you get the winter doldrums, you're out there praying, please, Lord, can you make the windmill turn? We all need baths. You know, and my children are some of the last, I'm sure, to grow up in the way that they did. They were homeschooled or one room. We got a one-room school open that was 25 miles away. And for high school, they had to board out. So it was, you learned to be very self-sufficient.
Oh, my. And how many children did you have?
I have the girls, twin girls, and, in fact, both of those at different times and still occasionally recite poetry. And I had a son that I lost about 2 years ago that was 10 years younger than the girls.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wow. Wow. So was, if you don't mind expounding on that, was it an accident? Was it an illness?
No, it wasn't. And in fact, Margo Metragano, who I'm sure you know pretty well, the Bardi lady, as I call her, my son is actually on the cover of that CD, and it is dedicated to him. When he was 20 years old, he was diagnosed with a very rare disease. It's not cancer, but it causes tumors along the brain lining and the spinal lining, and there is no cure for it. Radiation, chemo does not stop it.
Oh, wow.
And it's a horrible disease to watch someone go through because slowly everything is taken from you, every nerve function that you have.
Wow.
And to have a young man have to go through that for his life expectancy was 5 years, and he did make it 7.
Wow. So how does your faith play into that, Deanna?
It was pretty difficult at first. And, you know, it was, I did lots of telling the Lord that, you know, I know you say that you won't give us any more than what we can handle, but that my shoulders are really getting narrower by the day.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm so sorry that your family had to go through that. Oh, my goodness. Goodness. So how are you guys all doing now?
You know, I think due to faith, you're able to go on. I've often remarked, along with other people, I don't know how people, when they lose a loved one, those that don't believe, I just can't imagine it. And I know there's people that way that don't believe that there's anything after this, that this is all there is. And you know, my response to them is always, oh, I hope not.
You have people you want to see, huh?
That's right. I hope this you know, that they don't have faith that there's something better waiting for us, and we'll be reunited with loved ones and so on.
Right, right. Oh, I'm right there with you. I am. Well, gosh, it just had a fascinating life. I'm just so even more impressed with you than I already have been, Deanna. It's just amazing. We're going to be going into another poem of yours, and this one actually is kind of a funny one that I really love. And I got a belly laugh when I got to the end of this, and it was so cute. Can you tell us how you came to write The Hired Hand?
It's a true story. Most of my poetry is based probably 99% on something true, and this actually happened to me. I won't spoil the poem, but it actually happened when we were in Nevada, and we had called in to Capriola's and Elko to see who was available to come out and day work.
Okay. So we will let the poem tell its story by itself, and it's called The Hired Hand.
The Hired Hand. We made a call to town to have some help sent down. The horses and us were wore out. I even walked like I had gout. They said they'd send a gal out. She knew what riding was about. We agreed it'd be all right, and she'd arrive that night. After supper, I heard a truck come in and went to check the bunkhouse again. I was surprised to find her there. It did kind of give me a scare. Well, she was experienced all right, and I was grateful for the poor light. She looked so old and poor, standing slumped in that door. Her battered hat had a hole in the crown, and strands of dirty hair hung down over a face lined with dust and crud that water would have turned to mud. There was a tattered scarf round her neck. Her coat looked like she'd been in a wreck. One sleeve was torn halfway loose, where feathers floated in search of the goose. Just as I was about to voice my doubt, I let out a strangled shout. Recognition had come to me, and I tried to gather some dignity. For all my fears had come true, and there wasn't a thing I could do but slam that bunkhouse door and not look in that damn mirror anymore.
Oh, Deanna. So that really happened to you?
It did. It did. I thought, oh, boy, what a poor excuse they sent out, and then went, oh. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Deanna, did you always write poetry, or was that something? Tell us how you got started with that.
I can probably attribute that to my granny, my dad's mother. They had, you know, come out to California as well, and I spent a great deal of time with granny and granddad when I was too little to go with dad. And she would go around, I'd follow her around, and she was forever rhyming everything. And she said all the old sayings, you know, that you don't hear anymore. And she would tell me, even when I was very small, probably first, second grade, she said, you need to write your poems down. You need to write them down, and someday you can have a book. And so I attribute that to Granny. She did all of the old rhyming ones, and somebody coming, you know, your nose itches, and somebody's coming with a hole in their britches, and and you know the one I can't even think of the one I want to about Sally. What is the one about? What's your name? And Sally something or other asked me again, and I'll tell you the same. I mean, that was what I grew up with.
Oh, Crimson Jean and. Oh, okay. So then that's what inspired you to actually, as a child, to start writing poetry.
I think. And when I was small, there was a guy who worked for us, a hand, and he and granddad would sit out on the front porch in the evenings and tell stories and sing songs. Granddad would play an old jew's harp, and they would do poetry and stories and the old, old songs. And, you know, that was the entertainment. We didn't have, even in California there, we didn't have TV or anything else. So that's how time was spent.
Wow. So when did you actually start writing your poems down and saving them?
Probably my early 20s.
And
in fact, during the first gathering, I looked at it and I thought, well, there was no way on earth I could get up in front of people. I was always a very shy child. Family came, I hid in the closet or under the bed. I was that shy. And so there was no way that I was going to get up and, you know, speak to people. So instead, I sent some poems in to Meg Glazier and some of the first people involved with the gatherings. And I did not appear until, I think, 1987. I would not get on stage in 1986 because I was pregnant. I wasn't about to do that. It was bad enough anyway, and my leg shook so bad I don't know if they could hear me over that leg thumping or not.
Oh, I can relate to that. The first time I ever sang in public, I mean by myself, my knees were jumping up and down so bad. I was like so thankful I had a dress on, or else people would have been able to see.
Yeah.
I can. I can totally relate to that. There's nothing like that kind of scared. Oh, my gosh. But you did it. You actually got up in front of people and started sharing your poetry. That's really cool, Deanna. It took some strength.
Yeah, and, you know, and a lot of, they say that's the number one fear is public speaking, and I can relate to it.
Yeah. It can be pretty scary. So then that evolved into then your own books and that kind of thing, because you do have a couple of books, award-winning books, I might add. So tell us a little bit about that, how that came together with your own books.
Well, actually, I think the first thing, my CD writing, it won the Cowboy Poetry Album of the Year. I believe that was 2012. That I came out with. I had a couple of other CDs, and I also had one that my late son and I did put together, and he was a very good reciter, and we did one together, and then I did one called Hot Iron, and then I did the writing one. Then I came out with Mustang Spring Frontier Project. Is the publisher of that, and I was just so thrilled and honored and humbled to have won the WMA Poetry Book of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
then,
very well deserved.
Yeah, that was just so neat, and it's a mix. It's about 50-50, I believe, of poetry and short stories. And the short stories, also I had people say, oh, you know, I wish you'd write more. So this year I came out with a book of short stories about women in the West.
Oh, yeah,
and
rough passages.
It ranges from pioneer era to modern day, and they do go through some terrible times, but they come out good in the end.
I can't wait. When is that book out, or when is it going to be out?
Yes, it came out the 1st of July.
Oh, well, I'll have to get with you and order that for sure, because I am so eager to read that. And then also you won the Georgie Sicking Award, which I'm on that committee that actually got that started to honor that wonderful 90-plus-year-old cowgirl who does incredible poetry, Georgie Sicking. And I was so delighted when you won that award. And for people who aren't aware of it, it was the poetry could be men or women submitting the poem, but it had to be real, about the real cowboy life. It couldn't be fluff or anything, you know, just kind of whimsical. It had to be something that just was really gritty and really true to form, because that's the way Georgie is. And actually, the judging committee narrows it down to a few poems, and then they would, one or two, I think it was, and then they sent it to the Sicking family, who then chose which poem they liked the best. And so I was just so delighted when you won that, Deanna.
Oh, I was too, and I've known Georgie for years. And I was just incredulous. Last November when I won both awards, I was just, and I had to laugh because your husband knew, and he was trying to keep me from leaving the wings of the stage.
Yeah.
And I thought, gee, he would keep stalling. He'd step in front of me and say something else, and I thought, gee, what's going on?
I go, sit down. Stop with this guy. That was very cute. And do you love those spurs? A dear friend of mine, Tommy Thompson, TNT Spurs, made those spurs. And that was something Georgie actually wanted. That's what she wanted the award to be, was spurs. She didn't want it to be a buckle. She wanted it to be spurs.
They have a place of honor. In fact, I'm looking at them right now on top of a bookcase. That's where they are.
You have to wear them.
I know, and I just actually am having some spur straps made to go on them.
Georgie would not be happy if you left them on that neat little display thing.
I know, and they're made. They are working spurs. They're really beautiful, but they are working spurs.
That's what she wanted. She said, I don't want any of those fancy, floofy things. I want good working spurs. That's what I want the award to be. So I'm just so delighted that you got it. So now, do you have one of your favorite stories that you could share with us, other than a poem, that you could just tell us?
Yeah. since this program's about faith and so much of what I write, even if it's not real evident, it, between the lines, I almost lost both my twin daughters around their senior high school year. They were late coming in, and we had bought them a car for Christmas, a new little car, because we lived 60 miles from the high school. And this was during the summer, and they were late coming in, and they knew better to be late. I was a pretty strict parent. And so we were, husband and I were up and were worried, and they knew that we had to ship cattle the next morning. So they finally came in. We heard this bump, bump, bump coming down this dirt road, and we got up, and one of the girls, the car, I don't know how she drove it, and she drove it 8 miles with all four flat, just absolutely crushed. And what happened is they knew they were late and got to going a little too fast and rolled that car several times.
Oh, my gosh.
And they got out, and, of course, we're bloody, and she, you know, don't be mad at us, first thing. She says, I'm worried about my sister. And we got them out of the car and looked at them, and we had just gotten cell phones, first time we had cell service in Nevada, 9 days before the accident. And I checked them over, and Katie, one of the girls, kept saying her shoulder hurt, and I was looking at it, and I thought, well, gee, I don't see anything. And I thought, you know, I'm going to take them in, I think call the ambulance, just in case there's internal damage. And we did. We were able to get a hold of the ambulance, and by the time we got into the hospital, which is 105 miles away, and had them checked out, the doctor came out and said, we're going to have to airlift one of them. She's broken her neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And part of this miracle is when the accident happened, it was halfway between the highway and the ranch. It's a 9-mile dirt road. And the daughter saw her twin knocked out unconscious. And so she thought, well, do I run to the house or do I run to the highway? You know, the car was just horribly, you wouldn't believe anybody lived through it. And she said she started running to the highway, and a voice told her, go back and start the car. It will start. Go home. So she did. She turned around, went back, and the key started. And she was able to drive it home.
Wow. Wow. That was the angels that got her home.
You bet.
Oh, my gosh. So how are your girls today?
They are great. They each have three children. In fact, one of them, my second oldest granddaughter, just got married this weekend in Idaho.
Oh, my gosh. You are too young to have grandchildren getting married. Good grief.
That's
well,
what
you
I told
when
them
you were
too.
16. You started when you were 16, so.
Yep.
I guess.
Yeah, we just celebrated last month our 40th wedding anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, congratulations, Deanna. That is so cool.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Well, we're going to go into a poem now that is one that I really just enjoy listening to. I hadn't heard it before, and it to me, it just epitomizes ranch people and agricultural people. I mean, it's just a wonderful poem called Cow Country Code, and can you tell us about that?
You know, I'd written this quite a while before there was any mention of an award, and I just wanted a poem that spoke of the values that all of us were raised on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that really kind of told, people talk about cowboy codes and so on and so forth, and I thought, I want to write this in a way that perhaps it will move people enough to realize, yeah, this is what we're supposed to do. Let's literally love thy neighbor.
Yes, yes. Well, let's go ahead and listen to Cow Country Code.
Cow Country Code. I listen carefully, listen to directions, all based on recollections of cattle last seen, water, and grass green. His face was lined from a lifetime, of counting every nickel and dime, worries and cares, hopes and prayers. He'd outlived his child, outlived his wife, seemed to have tired of life. After the stroke, spirit and body broke. Drought had fallen heavy on the land, grass replaced by piles of sand, tanks lay long dry under a blazing sky. We prowled around, prowled for his cows, swore to ourselves renewed vows of helping neighbors and our free labor. But we faced mortality, faced our own years, and sought to appease our fears of growing old and outfits sold. Cattle were gathered and sorted, numbers tallied and reported. We figured the amount, he was given the count. It would be enough, would buy a place in town to watch the sun go down on a quiet street with memories bittersweet. His old hand shook as the paper curled that gave a dollar amount to his world. He took our word, couldn't really see the herd. That tally he held with quiet pride, was one time we all lied. We'd padded the count, added to the amount. His cattle were thin, were rough and open, hadn't calved like we were hoping. We added a few, ours, and he never knew. It was our raised to do right, in the old days of black and white, no question of gray, only one right way. We rode hard and long all day for something more valued than pay, a time-honored code. For this we rode.
Oh, I just love that. I just love it, Deanna. You know, it puts me in mind of a song that I was blessed to record that Joyce Woodson wrote. I don't know if you've heard it, called Palomino Pal.
I have, and I really enjoy Joyce's music, too.
I do. Well, I had Gary go ahead and load this up, and I think it'd be really fun to listen to Palomino Pal, just kind of back-to-back with Cow Country Code. So why don't we go ahead and listen to Palomino Pal real quick?
All righty.
My Palomino got a rock in his shoe. He can walk like he used to. Got down from the saddle and turned him round. Took him back to the home corral. I curried him up and I watered him down. Got a hold of his hoof and cleaned it out. He wanted to thank me. I tried to explain as he nibbled my ear. I said, that's what a pal would do. Help you out when you're feeling blue. You do the same for me, it's true. Cause that's what a pal would do. Thank you. if you haven't heard this, then listen in. To have a friend, you've got to be a friend. A short time here, then we're gone with the wind. Tell them you love them, been thinking of them, cause that's what a pal would do. Help you out when you're feeling blue. They do the same for you, it's true, cause that's what a pal would do.
Like you, Deanna. She writes stuff that just takes you there.
Oh, that's so a beautiful cool. song.
I thought it was so sweet. So, Deanna, I know that you have your books and your CDs are for sale, and of course your new book, which I need to get a hold of. Can you tell people where they can purchase this?
Yeah, the books are available on Amazon.
Okay.
Or through me, Barnes & Noble as well. CD is available, I think at this point, just through me. I have a website. It's DeannaDickinsonMcCall.com. And I think that should about cover it as far as places. And, of course, if you want them signed, I sign every book, and I'm glad to sign it to someone as well.
That's really sweet. And if anybody has any trouble getting hold of you, they can always get a hold of you through our equestrianlegacy.net. We'll make sure they hook up with you if they have any trouble tracking your stuff down. So we'll sure help anybody. Well, it's just been marvelous having you on the show and just hearing about your life and just discuss real deal cowgirl life. And it was so reminiscent for me of my growing up, especially when we moved up into the foothills near Three Rivers, actually out of Three Rivers, where my dad was raised. And the ranch we were lived on in the summer wasn't bad. We had electricity and running water because it was gravity flow. So when you said gravity flow, I was like, oh, I know how that goes. But in the winter, forget it. The power line, the snow messed up the power lines. There was no power, no water. The river would rise and wash out the water, would bucket the water up from the river. And it was just, I mean, TV, forget it. There was no television. And so,
right.
and it was all wood stove heating. So, I mean, did y'all cut wood year round? We cut wood year round to make sure we had wood for heat in the winter. So we were always cutting wood.
Yeah, we did. And, of course, when it's hitting 30, 40 below, you're up throughout the night feeding that stove, you know,
yes,
continually.
You can't go out.
Yep, that's it.
I've been there, done. Not quite to the extent you have for the number of years you did. I can't even imagine raising babies that way. I mean, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Deanna. You're a tough cookie, girlfriend.
Oh, I tell you, it's a different life, but, you know, I wouldn't trade any of it.
No, I mean, I found actually that the toughest years, of course, we were children, and like you said, it's different when you're a child or when you're the mom. But the years as children that we lived through that and had, you know, pretty meager existence like that, I mean, by, you know, when you, relatively speaking. But, oh, my gosh, we look at that every one of my siblings look back at that period of our life, and that is some of our best memories as a family, because you pull together so tight as a family. You depend on each other. The animals all depend on you. You depend on them. And you just work together, and you laugh together, you play together, you work hard together, and everything – is so, you're so supportive of each other and so tight-knit. It just is an amazing experience as a family, I think.
Oh, I do too. And I think that's one reason we've seen the loss of true family relationships nowadays.
Because they don't have to interact.
Nope, they don't. Everybody goes their own way. And, you know, when kids grow up in an agricultural-based situation, then they know what mom and dad do all day. And they're very often involved before school age, and then after they go to school, they're involved with it after school and on the weekends.
Yes, yeah, they're working with the family. And, I mean, I can't even imagine having the time to be sitting on a video game or playing with my phone or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't have had a phone. Even if they had been around, I wouldn't have had a phone. But, yeah, I can't even imagine doing that and just – and just seeing life unfold in front of you with the animals and, you know, life and death and, you know, hard times and good times. And it's a wonderful life teacher, this rural life. And so just, again, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And I've had so much fun to get to know you better, Deanna, just because we never have time to talk at these events. Everybody's on roller skates or just zipping past each other.
Oh, I know.
On the way to the next stage. And so you just, you know, get a little chit-chat, but nothing very much. So this was very, very fun. And we're going to close with, I think, a pretty special poem that you wrote. And so would you go ahead and set up Windy Ridge for us?
Yes, and I will say this was written for, I wrote this when my son was first diagnosed. And that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we will listen to, and thank you again, Deanna, for being with us today. And we are listening and closing out this segment of the show with Windy Ridge.
Windy Ridge. Up on Windy Ridge, I see the Guadalupes rise and watch an eagle soar and glide through azure skies. I see the cornutus across the grasslands below, the organ's pillars of gray barren rock, a dull glow. The horse and I have journeyed here alone, more alienated than I have ever known. Seeking answers that refuse to be found, we struggle to climb to the highest ground. Artifacts lay in the dust of this peak, remnants of past people who came to seek visions and direction to lead their way, while I simply kneel and reverently pray. I do not expect a voice or vision, seeking guidance and profound decision, but I open my soul and plead my case in what I believe is a holy place. I rise and try to store the view I savor, wondering if I have somehow found favor before I begin the rough ride to descend and leave my prayers floating on the wind.
Wow, what a lady and what a life. Oh my goodness, just it was such a pleasure having Deanna on the show today and learning more about her amazing life. And goodness, she is the epitome of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and just doing whatever needs to be done. And knowing how cowgirls operate, I think it's pretty safe to say that Deanna walked through all of those challenging times in her life with little to no complaining. Just trust in our Lord, and knowing that complaining really is a total waste of energy. You just put your head down, you trust, and you do it. And the scripture tells us in Philippians 2:14 to do everything without grumbling or arguing. Now, for some of us, that is challenging enough, but the scripture goes on to tell us in 1 Thessalonians 5:18 to give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. So not only are we to not complain, we are actually instructed to give thanks for whatever we're going through. Now, this may feel counterintuitive. It does to me. But as always, God has a wonderful plan in all of this, and he lays it out in James 1:2-4. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So like Deanna, when we face our challenges head on, when we don't complain, and we thank the Lord for the opportunity to grow through the challenge, God's word promises us tremendous growth in our faith and our steadfast commitment to Him. I like to think of it as spiritual weightlifting. You grow strong muscles by not only using them, but by pushing them to their limit. It is the same with faith. And I can tell you from experience, the more you dig in, put your head down, trust the Lord, and walk in faith, the stronger you become. And what used to throw you for a loop, as you grow and become more steadfast in your faith, you can handle those situations with ease. What a fabulous promise from our Lord. Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, cowgirl poet, Kinsen McCall, for sharing a bit of herself with us today. And of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all that he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. And you can even download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. So if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And until next week, may all your trails be blessed.
Blinded by the weight of life, I wonder, does he hear? I feel so far from his precious peace, but choose to believe he is there. For what is faith but trusting God when we cannot see or feel? That's when faith is purified, perfect as gold, strong as steel. Our despair. I rejoice in the faithfulness of the Lord. I rejoice in the faithfulness of the Lord. So cast aside the they must flee at your command. For in the face of God.